Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you in the air by Listen Support Community Radio Station, WFT, broadcasting from downtown Champaign, Illinois at 90.1 FM and webcasting live worldwide at WFT.org. Views and opinions expressed here, those of speakers do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Bob with some underwriting announcements.
Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice, both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. And programming on the World Labor Hour supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the Illinois Education Association Union. The Illinois Education Association's mission is to effect excellence and equity in public education and to be the advocacy organization for all public education employees. And this hour programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, call 217-328-2295.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. And we're going to be doing a special show about this sort of the anniversary show of the national disgrace that was Hurricane Katrina. And even though we're a couple weeks early on this, we were kind of forced to do this because of other guests that were scheduled quite a bit in advance. So plus our two-hour Labor Day program on the 30th, which is closer to the date. So anyway, first we're going to have a couple news stories from Bob, and then we're going to give a little background. And we got a very special guest, too, live here in the studio. He's going to talk about his experiences when he was down in New Orleans immediately after Hurricane Katrina. So, Bob?
Yeah, Dave, just continuing on the situation down there in Metropolis, Illinois with Honeywell.
The story that won't go away.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's been continuing since 2010 on and off, you know. And they locked out the workers back on August 1st of this year.
And that's at the nuclear waste refinery.
They process uranium into something that they can then use in nuclear power plants.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
And yeah, they locked them out this time, August 1st of 2014. Mm-hmm. And that's like the second or third time now that they've been locked out since 2010. They have a meeting coming up Monday at 10 o'clock, August 18th. So, and the union and the company are kind of fighting in the press down there. The spokesperson, Peter Dalpy, from the company, sent out a letter to the union members. The letter states that the company's offer before the contract expired, that they're raising the hourly wage from one amount to another one.
Mm-hmm.
But it talks about health care, and the union says this is one of the main sticking points. And they're talking about having initial deductibles of about $1,500 for individuals and $3,000 deductibles for families. And they got out-of-pocket maximum expenses of $4,000 for individuals and $8,000 for families. They say they got a response from the United Steelworkers local, and it says, contrary to company statements, the company's current proposal would allow them to lay off a union member for any number of reasons, then backfill that job with a subcontractor. This has been one of the problems down there, is that they've done this repeatedly in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But the union's proposal is not asking the company for anything more than to fulfill the promises that were made following the 2010 lockout. In the last 3 years, Honeywell has systematically eliminated 80 local jobs in favor of out-of-town, unskilled subcontractors that they openly admit cost them more than hiring the local employees. So they said here, now there was just an arbitration win for the workers here. This goes back to the mass layoff of their members back in May of 2012. They supposedly said, the company said, it was to make seismic upgrades of the plant. That when they hired these people back, they hired most of them back, but they left 20 members laid off. And they've been trying to get these people hired back for years. And actually, one of the members was selected to fill one of these new positions that they opened up there. But upon returning to work, even though he'd had 10 years seniority, the company chose to treat him like a new hire. So they eventually went to grievance procedure. The union took the case to arbitration. And just August 14th here, just the other day, the arbitrator ruled that the company violated the contract, ordered Honeywell to restore the employee's seniority and to make him whole for all losses. So this continuing struggle goes on down there, and Honeywell just does not treat those workers well. And,
no.
We've known it. It's been going on for 4 years now.
And not to mention endangering the local community there. And that community, Metropolis, is right on the Ohio River. That's a pretty scary scenario there with dealing with uranium processing.
Right, right. Yeah. And they bring in these unskilled subcontractors and stuff who have no experience with this and leave these laid-off workers sitting idle at home.
I believe, wasn't the president of the local one of these 20 they didn't hire back?
Yeah, you know, that looks bad.
Yeah, indeed.
You figure that's one of the reasons they don't hire him back.
He must have been a good president of the union. If they did not hire the president of the union back, he must have been fighting for the workers, which doesn't always happen.
Well, what else do we have? I get something about a railroad related story here.
I could do that. We kind of mentioned that a couple weeks ago, but the rail workers are denouncing this dangerous deal between the union officers and management, and this is going on for the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway. And essentially, thousands of railroaders abruptly learned that their union officers had held secret negotiations with Burlington Northern Santa Fe's, and they reached a deal to allow single-person train crews, which they're calling a safety disaster. So ballots on a tentative agreement went out in early August. They're due back in September. If the vote goes up, huge freight trains could rumble through towns across the western U.S. with just an engineer on board, no conductor. And talks about what conductors do on those trains. They hop off to throw switches that move the trains to another track. They add and remove cars. They update the list of cars which have hazardous materials in them. If a busted air hose or some mechanical problem stops the train, they confer with the engineer about hazards and approaching approaching speed restrictions and pedestrians or railroad crossings coming up. So what they're doing, railroaders are seeking out an RWU. It's a new Facebook group, and that's Railroad Workers United, which has been campaigning against the looming threat of single-person crews for a decade. And with just weeks to go, its members are suddenly busy sending out vote no stickers and appealing to local labor councils to pass resolutions backing two-person crews. So,
as a former railroad operator, I was a conductor. A conductor is a crew foreman. Now you got a crew of two. The engineer can't go forward or do anything without the foreman's permission. But as far as secret negotiations are concerned, I've had a lot of experience with the United Transportation Union, and that doesn't surprise me in the least. The UTU, when they formed, it was a, I said this 2 weeks ago, I'll make it short. There were several of the operating brotherhoods that were joined together.
These are all individual craft unions that work together on the railroad. Okay.
Instead of creating an industrial union, they took all the worst aspects of craft unionism and called it an industrial union.
Okay.
Yeah. It talks here, it says that at its 20th century peak, railroad employment totaled 2 million. Today it's 10% of that. And they say, the RWU people say, that's not because the country is shipping less freight. On the contrary, he says, we're moving more tonnage than ever before, but they say feuding unions allowed new technologies to replace workers. Rail freight crews dwindled from 5 to 2, and now they're talking about taking them to 1.
So, I mean, all these duties that have to happen. I can't, you know, they're expecting the engineer to stop the train, get off, switch the...
Yeah. Well, you know, it's nice to have somebody talk to, maybe to stay awake while you're running that thing.
At the very least,
but
sure.
They talk about that here, too. Some of these guys are up 48 hours consecutively.
Well, I got something that relates to this on a local level that I'm experiencing right now, which is almost... pretty close to secret union unions leaders having secret negotiations with an employer and not really acting in a real democratic manner, and that is this job that I have right now. This company, we're doing concrete pours, and we did 68 hours this week, up to 15-hour days. And the thing is, we're not working late. We're starting early.
God,
we're
starting at 3 a.m. or something?
2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Now, when we were doing the interior floors at the craft plant, we had to have 4 iron workers to put in this steel reinforcing, stuff. And anyway, those iron workers, they got, I can't remember the exact numbers, but before like maybe a certain time, they were getting double time. Mm-hmm. And then until 7 o'clock, they were getting, time and a half, because 7 o'clock is generally starting time for everybody now. And, what happened with us was one day my boss came up and asked me if I'd work nights. And I said, yeah, I'll work nights. And what happened was apparently, the local 703 made a deal with them for us to have a night shift. You see? And this night shift just happens to be whatever they want to define it as and whenever they want to do it. It's not like when I worked nights at the Clinton building, the Clinton power plant, where you went in week after week after week at the same time. This is like, oh, well, we're doing 7 o'clock for some, you know, for a while. And then this opportunity comes up to pour somewhere. And the reason they're doing this is so that they can get, they have more access to concrete trucks. You see, and we get like, I think it's a $2 an hour premium instead of getting, time and a half for every hour before 7 o'clock. So maybe in an 8 hour day, it evens out. I don't know, but, it's getting pretty tough. But that's just something right there. The way I think that should have been handled is somebody from the local should have come out to the job, got the crew together and said, here's the way it is. Explain what they wanted to do, and also maybe tell us about the perhaps the bad aspects of these kinds of shifts.
And let the crew decide if they want to do it or not.
Right, and vote together instead of having your boss come up and ask you if you would work nights.
And oh, by the way, we already cleared it with your union representation.
No, they didn't even say that. They
didn't even say that.
No.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, as I was stating earlier, this is a program today about the remembrance of the national disgrace that was called Hurricane Katrina. Just a little background here. On August 29th, Hurricane Katrina storm surge caused 53 different levee breaches in greater New Orleans, submerging 80% of the city. A June 2000 report by the American Society of Civil Engineers indicated that two-thirds of the flooding was caused by the multiple failures of the city's flood walls. The storm surge also devastated the coast of Mississippi and Alabama, making Katrina the most destructive and costliest natural disaster in the history of the United States. 1,833 people were confirmed to have been killed, but the actual number killed is probably much higher. The hurricane surge protection failures in New Orleans are considered the worst civil engineering disaster in U.S. history, and prompted a lawsuit against the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the designers, and the builders of the levee system. Responsibility for the failures and flooding was laid squarely on the Army Corps in January 2008 by Judge Stanwood Duval, U.S. District Court. But the federal agency could not be held financially liable because of a sovereign immunity agreement in Flood Control Act of 1928. There was also an investigation of the responses from federal, state, and local governments, resulting in the resignation of Federal Emergency Management Agency FEMA Director Michael Brown and New Orleans Police Department Superintendent Eddie Compass. And within days of Katrina's landfall on the 29th of August, public debate arose about the local, state, and federal government's role in the preparations for and response to the hurricane. Criticism was initially prompted by televised images of visibly shaken and frustrated political leaders and of residents who remained stranded by floodwaters without water, food, or shelter. Deaths from thirst, exhaustion, and violence days after the storm had passed fueled the criticism as the dilemma of the evacuees as at facilities such as Louisiana Superdome and the New Orleans Civic Center. Some alleged that race, class, and other factors contributed to the delays in the federal government's response, especially when compared to Hurricane Camille that hit Florida the previous year. The President and Secretary, Homeland Security Secretary Mike Chernoff, came under harsh criticism for what perceived as a lack of planning and coordination. FEMA Director Michael Brown claimed that Governor Blanco of Louisiana resisted their efforts, was unhelpful. Governor Blanco and her staff disputed this. Michael Brown eventually resigned as Director of FEMA in spite of having received a recent praise from President Bush. Quote from George Bush, "Brownie, you've done a heck of a great job." Remember that? And during a concert for hurricane relief, benefit concert for victims of the hurricane, rapper Kanye West veered off script and harshly criticized the government's response to crisis, stating that, quote, George Bush doesn't care about black people, unquote. Although the camera quickly cut away and the scene was deleted from delayed broadcasts, West comments still reached the East Coast and were replayed and discussed afterwards. Bush later called West's remarks the worst moment in his presidency. Criticism from politicians, activists, pundits, and journalists of all stripes were directed at the local state government, headed by Mayor Ray Nagin of New Orleans and Lieutenant Governor Kathleen Blanco. Just some background here. It's really interesting. I think probably, to me, this background, one interesting fact amongst many, was that Ray Nagin, the mayor of New Orleans, refused to use over 1,000 New Orleans City buses for evacuation. Instead, ordered them to be parked and left at their bus facility. And then over 70 countries pledged monetary donations and other assistance, notably Cuba and Venezuela, were the first countries to offer assistance, pledging over $1 million, several mobile hospitals, water treatment plants, canned food, bottled water, heating oil, 1,600 doctors, and 83 tons of medicine and field hospitals. Though this aid was rejected by the Bush administration, stating that, quote, they didn't need it. President Bush also refused to bring home from Iraq the Louisiana National Guard, stating that, quote, they have more important things to do in Iraq. So that was just a little bit background kind of what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to go here to a little music break, and we're going to be right back with some public service announcements and our very special in-studio guest to talk a little bit more about this national disgrace that was Hurricane Katrina. So you're listening to World Labor Hour, and we'll be right back.
Tell me forgive. Ain't nobody charged for the murders, yeah. Half the story ain't never been told. All these drowned victims full of bullet holes. Say what? Say what?
Okay, that was Dr. John, the song Say What on his City That Care Forgot CD that he produced right after Hurricane Katrina. And anyway, some quick public service announcements. Tune in today at 2 p.m. and every Saturday for None Other Sports Show with host fellow worker Neil Parthen. And also tune in to on Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. Labor's Worldview TV at Comcast Channel 6, Urbana Public Television, and also online at www.urbanapublictelevision.org. And this Sunday and the following Sunday, we're going to be showing two films about Hurricane Katrina this Sunday. It's a film called America Betrayed, narrated by Richard Dreyfuss. And just a little background on the film, levee failures during Hurricane Katrina, America Betrayed, that's shown in the film, follows the money, and the path leads straight back to the hallowed halls of Congress. The profits straight into the pockets of those with ties to the executive branch of the presidency, like Halliburton, Vice President Dick Cheney's previous employer. America Betrayed is a story of waste, fraud, and abuse at every highest echelon of our federal government. Through interviews with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists from the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, and Time Magazine, two noted scientists from Berkeley and Harvard, America Betrayed takes an in-depth look at just how our government's dirty little secrets have nearly ruined a great American city, New Orleans. The gloves are off in this film, and the inside story was told as longtime broadcast journalist and documentary filmmaker Leslie Carde talks for the first time with insiders who know exactly how the game was played, from the contractors who built substandard structures in New Orleans and were told to keep quiet, to the whistleblowers who sacrificed their jobs to come forward and expose the cover-ups, cookbooks, and cronyism nationwide within the Army Corps of Engineers. This film digs deep to unearth the truth while scientists charged with investigating the Katrina disaster were intentionally led astray, while some independent journalists dug their heels in to get to the root of this disaster capitalism, a process by which government insiders cash in with emergency no-bid contracts in times of national stress. America Betrayed clearly exposes our government's misappropriation of funds for wars and corporate welfare for the wealthy, while bridges, dams, levees, and highways in this country are crumbling. America Trade is a cautionary tale for those who still trust their government. So tune in for that, and let you know too, the following Sunday we got an even better film than that one, even though they say this is a good film, but the one the following Sunday is called Trouble the Water, which is a film that was made by a couple from New Orleans who lived in the Ninth Ward, who stayed behind during the hurricane and also afterwards, and took all these home film movies and stuff. And man, I'll tell you, it's quite an, it won some awards at some film festivals. It was such a well done film, even though it was done by a couple of amateurs. It was an extremely powerful film. So tune in for those.
Hey Dave, I got a couple of public service announcements regarding WEFT. Just wanted to mention that WEFT has a tent and a table out at the Taste of Champagne this weekend. So come on out there and meet some of your favorite WEFT airshifters.
Yeah, like you, Bob.
Yeah, I'm scheduled to be there from 1 to 3 this afternoon and stuff. So stop on by. You can check out some information about the station and whatnot. And I believe we're also going to have a table and tent out at the Sweet Corn Festival next weekend, happening over in Urbana, Friday and Saturday over there. And I believe we're going to be at Quad Day, the 24th, next Sunday. And then I want to mention briefly that we got WEFFest coming up. This is WEFT's annual birthday celebration and street party going on Sunday, September 7th. We're at 113 North Market Street, and the music's going to be presented in Mike and Molly's Beer Garden. Party starts at 2 o'clock. At 3 o'clock, you got Jiggy and the Source. We're also going to have music from Desafinado, Jeremy Harper and Friends, and Kilbourne Alley. That's going on Sunday, September 7th. And I believe Bill has a little public service announcement about something that you can maybe win some tickets for through listening to WEFT over the next couple weeks.
Okay. What do we have, Bill?
Well, it's the Phases of the Moon Festival, and although I do have my Rick Perry smart-looking glasses on, it's printed extremely small.
Those wouldn't be smart-looking glasses.
this takes place September 11th to the 14th at Kennekuk County Park in Danville, Illinois, or at least near Danville, Illinois, and I'm really amazed at this. I'd heard about this, and I was really surprised at what's going on here. And anyway, between those 2 days, September 11th through the 14th, there will be widespread panic, string cheese incident, Bob Weir and Rat Dog.
I think he canceled.
Okay. But we just heard a song by Leon Russell. Mm. Leon Russell's going to be there.
Okay.
God, Leon Russell. I've listened to him for like 45 years.
I didn't know he's still alive. Yeah. That's good. Okay.
Oh, no. He and Elton John collaborated on something that's really brought him back. Mm. He's doing like a comeback now. Leftover Salmon, Tedeschi Trucks Band, Robert Randolph and the Family Band.
Government Mule?
Yes. Man, I mean, this is an incredible show, folks.
And a couple local bands, Abnormous and the James Jones Trio, are going to be there as well. So.
And something called Naked Rock Fight.
Okay. Man, this is some interesting names for some of these bands.
That's the 11th to the 14th.
Okay. Yeah.
And I do believe that WEFT's got some tickets that we're going to be giving away, so stay tuned over the next couple, 3 weeks for information about how you can maybe register and get in the raffle to win a couple tickets to the Phases of the Moon show.
Well, since Rick Perry's name was just brought up, at least he's now.
Do I look smarter, though?
Okay. No, you do, Bill. There's no doubt about it.
But Rick Perry doesn't.
Yeah.
You can't polish that turd. Okay.
Yeah, the good news, he's got, he's been indicted on 2 felony counts of.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I was reading the story this
morning. Abuse of power.
Yeah, what happened was they have this,
is there such a thing?
Yeah.
They have some kind a body in Texas that, investigates, government corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who runs it is the state's attorney of Austin, Texas, you know,
A
solid Democrat,
mm-hmm.
Democratic mm-hmm. town in Texas. And see, the position is set up so it's always that state's attorney of that county, no matter who it is.
Okay.
Well, anyway, the state's attorney got a DUI ticket. And so Rick Perry's, you know, saying that she can't be, running this investigation organ anymore. And so now he's being investigated under this law about putting undue influence on other government employees, basically.
Interesting.
It's like, you do what I say or you're getting fired.
Wow.
See, what he did was he line item vetoed the budget for that, department.
Interesting. Okay.
Well, the state of Illinois has 2 governors in prison. Texas might as well have one.
Yeah, yeah. What's the saying? They say Illinois is the most corrupt state in the union, but, there's one person I remember hearing say once, well, at least we catch our crooks, you know, so,
Well, that's it. They just get caught.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. Okay. We're going to take a real quick music break. We're going to be right back with our special guest, here in the studio, Russell Barnes, to talk a little bit about his experiences when he's down in, New Orleans area after Hurricane Katrina. So please stay tuned. You listen to the World Labor Hour on Listener Supported Community Radio Station, WFT in Champaign, Illinois. Be right back.
They don't have homes. They don't have jobs. The city of New Orleans will never be the same.
Now get off your asses and let's do something. And let's fix the biggest goddamn crisis in the history of this country. 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 Country.
Because it gotta come down to this. In order to see things for what they are, for what it is. We still might not be free up in this piece or treated very equally as far as I can see. Now if you saw what I saw and see what I see on that TV, it led me to write this song after talking to my father. But the anger in this song seemed to write his damn self. Hell no, we ain't all right.
What is boy, son of a bush? Nerd.
It's simple. It's racial.
Now all these press conferences, breaking news alerts, this just in. While your government looks for war to win. Blame for the blame game, names where I begin. Walls closing and get some help to my kin. Who cares? While the rest of the Bush nation stands as the drama unfolds as we the people under the stands. 50% of this son of a Bush nation is like hating on hating and setting up assassinations. Ask Pat Robertson, quiz him.
Smells like terrorism.
Racism in the news, still one-sided views. Saying white's fine food.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on Listener Support Community Radio Station WFT Champaign. Bill has a little historical audio clip he'd like to play for us right now.
Again, I want to thank you all for, and Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The FEMA director's working 24.
Yeah. Yes, that was George Bush telling, mentioning that he just thought the director of FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Association, Michael Brown, was just doing a heck of a job of what happened in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. Wow, you know, that's about the only thing I can come up with as far as that statement. But anyway, I want to introduce our special guest, Russell Barnes. Russell, welcome to the World Labor.
Hey, thank you for having me here again, Dave.
Yeah, actually, welcome back again because you were on the show a couple years ago and stuff.
Yes, I was.
Well, listen, you're one of two people we know from Champaign-Urbana. Was actually down in New Orleans right after Hurricane Katrina happened, and so I wanted to invite you back and just kind of tell us a little bit about your experiences. I guess maybe start with what made you go down there?
Well, first of all, I work for a crisis response unit, and I was an electrician, and we had a crisis all over the world, such as what happened in Katrina. Mm-hmm. And I just came back off an assignment, and as soon as I heard the news, I called my unit, and they told us that they was getting ready to call me, so I volunteered to go down with a lot of other people.
Okay.
And 2 days after that, I flew into Louis Armstrong Airport in Metairie. And once we got down there, Metairie wasn't hit as hard and everything, but the very next day, when we went down to the Ninth Ward, now I'm a Vietnam veteran, and this is the first time I've seen anything so tragic in the United States,
mm-hmm.
and so unorganized. And by being down there, I know what the government can do when they want to do it.
Yeah.
And for what they was doing down there, holding back, supplies, truckers and everything, people wandering the street, it was to the fact where your whole heart goes out. And a lot of people volunteered to go down there because these people lost everything.
Yes.
We still had what we had. But for you to be a U.S. citizen, knowing what your country can do and how they're helping all these other countries,
mm-hmm.
and having people down there waiting on help, and help is already there available, but they're refusing to let it go through.
Yeah, I want to go back to the statement you said earlier. Just you, since you are a veteran, you were in the U.S. military in the Army,
mm-hmm.
you basically have a very good experience firsthand of seeing how coordinated and how basically the U.S. military can mobilize.
How effective it can be.
How effective mm-hmm. it can be.
Thank
you.
As a part of the government of the United mm-hmm. States.
Well, let me tell you one thing about the military. All it takes is a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Once an order is given out, all these people waiting on the buses and everything like that right here, you have National Guard, you have the active military close by to Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
All they had to do was make one phone call. They could have had helicopters up in the air, they could have had Chinooks, they could have had a landing zone and everything, because the reason I'm going to this point, when we got down there, we had to build a landing zone. It took 3 bulldozers to knock down a tree to make a helicopter pad. We had a helicopter pad built in one day.
Mm-hmm.
We had people being flown to our location because we had tents and everything set up where they was rescuing people, bringing them there, and then we was shipping them there, putting them in buses and shipping them to Texas,
mm-hmm.
okay? So if we could do that in one day, the military is already mobilized. They have all this equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the holdup?
Yeah.
But Brownie didn't call him?
No, well, personally, I don't know who called, but whoever was in charge, personally, everybody themselves was in charge, because a lot of times we did things that we was told to do, and we looked at them and asked them, what are you talking about? So we reversed it, because we knew that it wasn't work. When you have somebody on the ground, on foot there, I don't care what looked good on paper, okay? I don't care who's sitting up in the White House making phone calls and down there, because when you have people dealing with millions and billions of dollars worth of money, I say millions and billions because that's what it added up to, okay, of money, and the money's not making it to you, then you take what you have and do what you have to make it work with who out there or what you have to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I was wondering, too, there was if this was a parallel to Haiti where they wanted to establish security before they wanted to bring any aid in.
Well, first of all, why should you have a staff security? First of all, you need to get aid up in there. Both of them are needed at the same time too. But you had people that needed more help than you had more looting and things going on. First of all, everybody was trying to find loved ones. People trying to get out. You have people out. You have dead bodies floating in the water and everything. So therefore, you need to establish taking care of your people first before you worry about security. See, security came later on after the corruption started being found out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, how can you call somebody a looter that's trying to get food and water, you know, in a situation
True.
Like that, you know. I mean, as far as I know from reports, the only looting that was done was by the local New Orleans police stealing cars, breaking into Walmarts and jewelry stores and stuff. I mean, that's documented fact.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, there's I heard Tom Hartman, I believe, mm-hmm. somebody on his program yesterday talking about Katrina, and they were talking about a video they saw somewhere. It was a news story on one side. It had a white person in a grocery store, and it was somebody providing sustenance for their family. And on the other side, they had a black person. They were looting. Described it as looting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to see if I can find that.
But. Yeah, okay. But anyway, so you go down there and stuff, and were you actually in, you said you were in the Ninth Ward?
Yes.
And then also, were you kind of there the whole time, or did you go other areas?
I was there for 3 years. My first year, I spent in Metairie. We was traveling from Metairie down to the Ninth Ward. My second year, I also had commercial CDL license, so I was in Gretner, and I was driving tandem dump trucks, taking the black mud down to the levee, so I had a chance to see a little bit of everything. My third year, I was in Slidell.
Okay.
And what it was, what really hurt me to my heart, when we was in the Ninth Ward, we was trying to help the people in the Ninth Ward and everything, then they pull, as an electrician, then they pull us away from there, and we like, where are we going? So we built this trailer park. So, you know, as we got the trailer park there, I was there when they had the people on the cruise ship, and they gave a two-week extension, and we worked down there. Even when we got finished with our work, we helped the asphalt people, and I knew nothing about asphalt, but we did what they told us to. And we were so proud that we had this 200 trailer park set up for these people to come up. Now, we couldn't house everybody, but some people were supposed to get there. After that last week extension they gave, we was there, and the people, they let the people off the cruise ship, and they did not put them in the trailer park.
What'd they do with them?
Well, first of all, the trailer park was still, it had already been inspected, and it was ready for them. The people was walking the street. They had nowhere to go. Saying, I'm telling you, and that hurt us too hard. And we're like, what is going on here? They tell me, well, we need some more people to come down and inspect and do this right here. Let me tell you something. We had laundry mats. We had the trailers hooked up now. They were big, a little bit bigger than a small FEMA trailer. But you can house them. If you can have six people in a small FEMA trailer, what the FEMA was bringing out there, right? Why couldn't you house these people up there? So therefore, we was angry. They knew we was angry. So then they shipped the electricians from there and had us go start working on Walmarts and Home Depots.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, they did. That's what they did. Wow. Because what I'm saying is, like, we wasn't just saying we was angry. We was voicing our opinion that we was angry. And then when it comes to the fact that we had these food tents set up and everything, okay, we would get our food and go through the food tent. We would come out the food tent and give our food to people that's out there. I mean, you know, you have people that are so tired. You see children out there. And, you know, and you're looking around. You're looking at them and saying, like, you know, they have nowhere to go. But you have to see the facial expression of how these people was hurt. How these people lost everything and don't know where the next meal is going to come from.
Yeah. Wow. That must have been a pretty, I mean, I'm sure you'll never forget that.
I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it.
I found this picture. It's not actually a video. First, you have an Associated Press picture that shows a young African-American man with, you know, dragging some garbage bags of food through the chest high water, and the caption reads, "A young man walks through the chest deep, flood water after looting a grocery store in New Orleans," blah, blah, blah. Okay. The picture underneath it is a white woman and a white man, and it's from Agence France Press, and it says, "Two residents wade through chest deep water after finding bread and soda from a local grocery store." I just wish it would have been the same publications, but that, I mean, that's just the perceptions of people, and I think it's very... it's ridiculous.
But, yeah.
But, you know, I would like to say, when you say about the wading through the water, another thing about in Louisiana, I had a individual that lived there, and I had an actual chance to see where the levee broke and how it came through the town. I mean, it was through the city. And what is amazing to me, you know how when the water settles, I mean, it sets, and then it recedes, right?
Oh, yeah.
So therefore, as we're going through, then we start seeing, you can see the water lines that's still at the houses and everything. We steady traveling, and it's getting higher and higher. And when we got to a Walmart, it was a Walmart. Walmart, what I had to say, Walmart did a great job. Everything that was left inside the Walmart, they took it on the outside, put it in the park lot, and put it in the section just like it was in the store. And whoever wanted could come if they could use it. But when we got to that part, he said, "Do you see the receding line?" And I'm looking around. I'm like, "No." "How many times have you walked to a Walmart and stood out the front of the store and looked up?" I said, "Well, there's no line around Walmart." I said, "How come it didn't?" He said, "That's because the water was over Walmart." So that's, so therefore, when you see, you have to understand the power of this water coming through this levee. And you already know New Orleans is below sea level anyway.
Yeah,
but to see from the beginning to where they go on. And another picture, it always stays in my head, when this black man was standing there and he had this baby raising it up in the air, and somebody had a sign that said, "Please help us." I mean, these people, you got to understand, these people stand, imagine the buildings that they were standing on top of. Now, when you go and see these buildings that they was in, and you see they're on the roof, and you have to understand how tall this building is. Yeah. This is not a natural, a normal house. That water was so high. Now, when you saw the people wading in the water, they was in the lower portion of it. But imagine all this 40 people stay on top of these buildings. And then I'm like, right here, understand that news people have to do their job too. But see, that's what I'm angry with the government, because they could have sent helicopters in there. But you flying around, okay, guess what? Take your report too. But why can't you assist and try to help somebody too?
You know, there was a hurricane that hit Cuba a couple years before that. And, here Cuba is a third world country, you know, compared to the United States, and there was no loss of life, and the Cuban military was mobilized with amphibious vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they mobilized their entire military. Amphibious vehicles and helicopters, and they got everybody out of the flooded areas mm-hmm. and stuff. Yeah, well, there's no reason why the U.S. government could have done that, right?
I'm sorry, but you were talking about the news helicopters. Now, this recent,
Ferguson.
Situation in Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard that they set up that you're not supposed to fly over there now.
No fly zone.
What I'm wondering is if they're going to start doing that perhaps with disasters, you know, just to keep the news media out.
The only thing that's doing is keeping the truth out.
That's
there,
right.
Yeah. And another point, I want to go back to what you're saying.
Yeah.
And then my personal opinion is this right here. If they wouldn't have turned down the aid that with the ships coming in with the doctors and everything,
right.
I feel as though a lot more people would have been saved.
Well, this is just another situation of the Bush crime family and specifically the Bush mob regime that was in power at this time. The Bush crime family goes back decades, at the very least, into World War II. Pre-World War II financing the Nazis. There you go. There's millions of people dead. You know, this is just for the Bush crime family. This is Katrina was just a little thing for them.
Well, they took advantage of it too. You know,
the disaster capitalism.
Yes. But Russell, I wanted to remember stories you told me about when you were working down there and stuff. Mm-hmm. Is like this happened. This is like the last week of August and the first couple of weeks of September. So it's pretty hot down there.
Oh yes, it's very hot.
So
very
you've
hot.
Got the stagnant water that's probably filled with sewage and probably snakes and tons.
Well,
of
all the chemical runoff from up here, the fertilizers and pesticides.
Well, you know, I'm telling you, not as only that, but let me tell you this right here. We had a team of people that would go out. Okay, with crisis response unit, you have every occupation you could think of.
Mm-hmm.
And we had firefighters, and their job was to go out into the swamps every day with using the maps.
Mm-hmm.
As they go out, they find dead animals. Their job was to dig a hole, bury them. But as they go out, they find bodies. Now, when they find a body, they had to bag and tag it.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't bring the body back. What they had to do was tie the body to a tree. Now, they didn't hang it. No, the reason for this, they had to take it up high, and they carried like 6-foot ladders with them, take it up as high as they could, tie the body to the tree.
Animal.
Then they would call, because of the alligator, because they didn't want the alligators to eat the body. So they had to tie the bodies to the tree. Then they would radio back to grid corners. Another team would come and go see. You can't have a team go out and come back because then you lose your progress. This team will continue to go on doing their job, finding bodies, finding animals. Because, like you said, when you have dead animals, you have contaminated water, and you have alligators out there. So, and you're talking about the heat. I mean, it took, at least about 2 to 3 weeks to get climatized for us. Okay. Mm-hmm. So therefore, then you have mosquitoes. We had to take so many shots while we was over there. It wasn't even funny.
Yeah.
You know, but I was saying it's right. But you know, then we had to have a makeshift morgue. And a makeshift morgue was like, it's a tenant place. It's completely sealed, but we have these big generators blowing in on both sides. We have two on each side. So they're blowing the air up in there. And the way the system would work, when they would bag and tag a body, okay, when they call it back in, they log it. When the individuals would go back out, that number had to match the other number, so let them know, okay, you did get that body. Now, quite naturally, everything wasn't perfect. Sometimes they had to keep going back out till they found the body because it was tied in the tree. But you have to understand, you in swamps.
Yeah.
Okay. The Everglades or what they call it down like that. So, or the bayous or whatever. But,
yeah, the bayous, yeah.
Yeah, so, and then, mm-hmm. then you have to understand also too, by the time, 9 times out of 10 they got to a body, it had been there for so long, you know, it had bloated, you know, and everything. So, I mean, it was nothing to see, a car body laying on top of a car or a body floating down on down the water or something like this. You can't get to it. All you can do is let it go past you. And there were so many people that died. But what really got me when they did the martial law down there.
Mm-hmm. Now, yes, let's talk about that. I want to take a quick music break. We'll come back and talk about that. You're listening to World Labor Hour on WFTU Radio, Champaign, Illinois. We're talking to Russell Barnes, a Champaign resident who was down in New Orleans immediately after Hurricane Katrina. So stay tuned.
Give me 3 to 5 minutes at some point to talk about.
We are at war with the universe. The sky is falling, and the only thing that can save us now is sensitivity.
Tragedy's hard to get over, but sometime that tragedy means it's over. Soldier from the Academy League of Rollers, I deny being down, though they seem to hold us. My shoulders are strong, I prove them wrong. I ain't doing nothing but moving on. Let the truth be known, but they talk that freedom matters and didn't even leave a ladder.
Okay, that was, you heard Lil Wayne, a special song he did about Hurricane Katrina, and we're back now. Listen to the World Labor Hour, and we're back with Russell Barnes. Russell, you want to talk a little about martial law conditions down there, too?
Okay, when we first got there, we didn't have martial law, but then after office fact, this is my personal opinion again, too. I think that whenever people started getting caught stealing the money and basically, I'm talking about FEMA, mm-hmm. and then the higher up people, they're supposed to be bringing the money down, but it's never reaching to the right location where it's supposed to be at. Mm-hmm. Well, they started martial law. It started at 9 o'clock. Anybody after 9 o'clock that was not officially or authorized to be out will be shot on sight. They made it perfectly clear, shot on sight. We were traveling in 7-passenger vans, so now gas was being rationed down there. But between 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning, our team would convoy between 15 to 20 7-passenger van with ID, escorted down, and as you're going down these dark roads down there, okay, all of a sudden, lights would come out from the side of the woods. It was the military. Mm-hmm. They would check each and every vehicle because, see, we was the only one authorized to fully fill up. They had the gas, but they would only give it to people that was down as far as, like, doing work to help them. Now, it's to say if you was living there and you had your personal car and you're trying to survive, you can only get $10 worth of gas.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I'm like, if you could service us, yes, we had to get around, but they had to get around too, and they yeah. had the money for it. Right. But then, the main thing about it, you may not have heard it on the news or seen it on the news. Everybody that died in Louisiana did not die because of Katrina. A lot of people were shot down there in Louisiana also.
Indeed. Now, you mentioned, too, I want to talk about that. There was a famous incident called the Danziger Bridge shooting. And, you know, this was one that actually got found out about. It was basically September 4th, which would have been like 6 days after the hurricane actually hit. So it's in this time period you're talking about. New Orleans police received a call from an officer at Danziger Bridge reporting gunfire. Several New Orleans police officers arrived at the scene in a budget rental truck. They proceeded to open fire with assault rifles and a shotgun on an unarmed family, the Bartholomews, who had been walking to a grocery store and were then sheltering behind a concrete barrier. 17-year-old James Brissett, a family friend, was killed and 4 other people were wounded. 2 brothers, Ronald and Lance Madison, fled the scene but were pursued down the bridge by 2 police officers in an unmarked state police vehicle. One officer fired a shotgun from the back of the car at Ronald, a developmentally disabled man who would later die from his injuries. One officer, Kenneth Bowen, was later convicted of stomping him on the back after he shot him and everything. Though this can, anyway, they were convicted actually eventually through the Justice Department. Though this conviction was overturned for lack of physical evidence, Lance Madison, one of the survivors, was taken into custody and accused of attempted murder. And then there was a big cover-up on this and continuing investigations that's still going on to this day. None of these cops, there was 5 of them that was indicted for murder. And there was not just this Danziger Bridge incident, but a couple other things, and they still haven't done any time in jail.
Well, you know, like I said, like you said, that's the one that they caught.
That's the
one that they caught. There were so many other incidents down there that we heard about. That's why I'm saying the government lets you know what they want you to know when they want you to know it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people believe in television, but you have to understand, you can't trust your government because there's a lot of things going on that the government be doing, and they deny it.
Yeah.
But then years down the line, then okay, the truth comes out. But look how long that has happened. Look how long people's gonna have to suffer because of that. I work with the government. I've seen what the government can do. I've been in the government. And I'm going to tell you, the government's the last person that I would trust.
Yeah. What's that bumper sticker? Love my country, fear my government.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Okay, Jim, you want to talk about contrasting what happened down at Hurricane Katrina with the
San Francisco fire and earthquake of 1905.
Okay, we're going back 100 years here. Okay.
A little more. First of all, Tom Paine said, the duty of a patriot is to protect the citizenry from its government.
That was a founding father.
That's one of my, he was a founding father. So, but anyway, in 1905, San Francisco was destroyed for all practical purposes, except there were a few things that were left that were up high. But the earthquake followed by the fire just completely destroyed it. Now, within a year, that city was completely rebuilt and rebuilt better than it was before. What happened was the military socialized everything. I know the socialist word, but that's exactly what it was. If you didn't work and you were able to work, you couldn't get any food. So, or you could leave town. If you couldn't work, you were taken care of. You know, if you were old or whatever, and everybody pitched in. And it was was the citizens that rebuilt their own town with assistance from engineers from the military and all that. And it was done within a year and better than before. Some things were lost, like the Barbary Coast, which was a lot of fun. That's where the brothels were and all the good music and mm-hmm. the casinos. which is now, Fisherman's Wharf and that whole, district. But as a whole, it just amazes me that in 1905 this could have been done, and what happened in New Orleans is just absolutely absurd and sad.
You know, some other things that happened right after Hurricane Katrina, once sort of a little bit of control had been, an order, so to speak, had been brought back. You know, one thing that I remember was all these stories, especially on Fox, but the other networks were picking up about all the, you know, the rapes and you know, assaults and killings in the Superdome. Well, it turned out later all that was bullshit. Oh, I'm sorry. BS. Sorry, folks. The thing is like, if you think about it rationally, if people are trying to survive, I mean, they're not really going to have the energy, you know, to basically commit rapes and, kill people for no reason, you know, unless, of course, they're fighting over food or something like that, but that wasn't even the case. But, what happened immediately afterwards, the Bush administration privatized all the New York's, New Orleans schools into charter schools. They suspended federal prevailing wage laws, allowed the importation of undocumented workers to work for these huge corporate contractors that were profiting, you know, from connections to the Bush administration to get these no-bid contracts. And then these workers weren't even paid after they'd worked for a month. And not to mention people not being allowed to return to their homes, housing projects that were never rebuilt and instead torn down, sold to private developers and turned into luxury condos. And, of course, a lot of people are saying, in fact, there's another song on the Dr. John CD, that this was the biggest land grab in history, that this catastrophe was used for a lot of these corporate interests that were politically connected to make a whole bunch of money and move out a lot of poor people and put all sorts of obstacles in their way from returning this stuff. And Russell, you know, one other thing I remember you mentioned before too is, didn't you see some people that were like in these internment camps?
Okay. They also had camps down there. Also, what it was, the if they wasn't being shipped out, they had a holding point. To me, it reminded me of back in the Nazi days and everything, where they had a POW camp.
Mm-hmm.
They had guards around the camp, and they was in the, makeshift tents,
mm-hmm.
and they stand on the inside. They have to be rationing their food and everything, and they're standing at the fence looking out while we sitting there looking in. And these are American people.
Yeah, so they couldn't leave.
No, they couldn't leave. Well, what it is, like you said, once they had them contained, then until they was able to ship them out, they had to worry about, them roaming around or trying to go anywhere else. They had them contained. And there are some people that, if they listen to this radio station, or if they've been shipped out to Texas, there was three other states they were shipping them to,
mm-hmm.
but I knew where we were. The buses were going to Texas, because I talked to the bus driver, I said, where are you taking them to? They said, we're taking them to Texas, that's all we can tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But to have your own people is not, okay, you can have, we had tents set up, but they had freedom to roam around where, I mean, the whole space that we was at. We did not have no barbed wire fence. We didn't have no armed guards. Right? See, this started coming later on into the point. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we was in Katrina. You rationing out bottled water. When you have an 18, when you have like 10, I mean, it was so many 18, I'm just using this example. If you had 30 or 40, 18 water, water was the most important thing down there. Sure. You have food. You rather have water than food.
Mm-hmm.
But when these supplies come in, okay, we know we have people backed up. You start passing out food. You start passing out water. You don't sit there and start giving one bottle of water. One bottle of water wouldn't last you before you left the back of a truck.
Yeah. Yeah.
So therefore, that's why I'm mad at the military, because the military had what we call water buffalo. They have these bags that you can hang up, and guess what? You fill it full of water. You put the ice in there. It will stay cold and everything. And all you have to do is keep adding water. And then when we would leave and go back, we're like, wow, look where we at. And you're thinking about these people out there. Why do they have to live so different? Why did they have guards around them? They're not like they was in prison. Then, okay, guess what? We have to keep these guys in. These were people with children,
mm-hmm.
older women. I mean, older people, you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? All nationalities up in there. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, when they left that state of Louisiana, their hometown, and went to another state and told them this is what happened, we didn't hear it on the news.
Yeah.
There's the government again. And let me tell you this right here. Oh, this was done. This was in the back of the woods. So this was not in eyesight of everyone.
Okay.
It was in eyesight of government people, crisis response people, and they're the same thing. Like right now, if they're listening, and I know they're mad and I don't care.
Okay.
Hey, I got Dave, another media misinformation thing, and this is more post-Katrina.
Okay.
And it was constantly, this shows you how ignorant all of the media is about working people, unions, and such in the United States.
Yeah.
I heard over and over and over, with no attribution at all, from every news person and commentator on this, including one left or liberal talk radio hosts and such,
mm-hmm.
And even the president, the director of the American Labor, God, what is it? The one that represents people who do like union newsletters. He was ignorant of this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what it is, they kept saying over and over, the prevailing wage down there is $9 an hour. The prevailing wage is $9 an hour. No, it's not. For electricians, it's $27 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
For laborers, it's $8 with specified benefits. This is real easy to find. All you have to do is do a internet search for prevailing wage rates in the United States, and you get them broken down county by county.
Yeah.
And I was just, I started emailing people about this, including mm-hmm. the director of the Labor Communications mm-hmm. Association,
mm-hmm.
and they were like, oh, we didn't know anything about it. And by the way, I interviewed David Swanson several years ago when he was director of the Labor Communications Association, and I was heartened thinking that we had somebody really good there, and I bet what happened was all the old conservative fogies bounced him out and hired some apparatus chick.
But you know, let me piggyback on that right there. Let me give you a news flash. When I was down as an electrician, your government was paying me $45 an hour, and I was getting $60 a day per diem. So you do the math.
Yeah.
We worked from 12 to 15 hour days. Yes, we did. 12 to 15 hour day, because what kept you going was helping your people. It wasn't about the money. But when you're talking about $9 an hour down there, when I first got in, they had signs down there at McDonald's. $12 an hour. And if you work there a year, you get $1,000 at the end of the year. So that's what was happening during Katrina, because they were short of help, even the businesses that was being open down there. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I'm letting you know, that's when we're talking about all this money that was gone. I'm just one individual. Can you imagine what our paycheck? Now I lived off of my per diem, $60 a day.
Yeah.
They paid for my housing where I was staying at. Okay. We didn't have to pay for any gas. They gave us rental vehicles. So I'm living off of my per diem. And then, I didn't have to pay for food because my food was free.
Yeah. Well, you know, you were a skilled tradesman and you were a rapid response. That's all mm-hmm. understandable. You know, what's the real thing here is all these contractors, they had all these no-bid contracts that...
Yeah, it's still in the money.
Right, and they suspended the prevailing wage,
yeah. Now,
and
Russell,
they were bringing in people from overseas.
Well, undocumented mm-hmm. workers, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't even get paid, you know, even though mm-hmm. they're being paid less than $9 an hour. I remember they actually went and had a little strike and set up a tent city at one of those parks. parks in New Orleans.
They had a college down there that they had a lot of Mexicans down there working, okay? And they was like the painters. They was the, doing the sheet rock lights right here. And we came to work. We doing electrical. We came to work by after 2 months and after being down there. And all of a sudden we see them, they sitting around. So we like, what's going on? So one of them came to and they said, look, so we've been down here. When they would leave from there, they had a special place they would keep them. They would feed them and everything, right? Mm-hmm. So they're paying. But what it was, they'll say, like, if I started the company, right, then all of a sudden I disappeared and Dave took over. Then they tell me, okay, well, I'm going to get you money. Just keep working for me. Keep working for me. So what happened was on the third day when we went down there, there was holes in the fence. And what they had did, the Mexicans came back and stole all the equipment that belonged to the company. They took the generator. I was laughing. I was having fun out there. I mean, but yeah. My thing was, I'm glad they did, but here's the thing about it. They was trying to get over on these people. They stealing the money, taking the money. But it's not that the owner had left. They just went home. Yep. And then they had another person to just replace them and everything. It was a game that they was playing on all these people.
Yeah. And by the way, that doesn't happen to Mexican immigrants just in that situation. Mm-hmm. I worked on a crew last year where they bounced 5 out of 7 paychecks.
Whoa.
On me. I got my money. I talked to a guy who had worked on the same crew a year before on the same project, and he told me that one of the – and these Mexicans on working for this company, they are straight from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
He said that one of them told him that he hadn't been paid for 3 months by this contractor. And this is a contractor in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
You know, did a project in this town right here. And he still hasn't paid my benefits.
Wow.
And the idiot has his personal cell phone number on his website, so I call him up and yell at him.
What's the number?
Okay. Yeah. Okay, very good. Well, you've been listening to the World Labor Hour on List Support Community Radio Station, WFT in Champaign. Russell, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Anyway, just want to let you know that, we do this every year because, this Hurricane Katrina should not, it should not be forgotten about just the incompetence and corruption of our own government in dealing with a disaster like this when it involves poor and working class people and, of course, enriching their buddies through no-bid contracts. And, I mean, it's just – and using the excuse to do other things, too, like privatize the schools, not pay – and bringing in undocumented workers, not paying them. I mean, these are all things that are just, I guess what I'm trying to get at here is that Katrina kind of was just, it's sort of the tip of the iceberg. We still got these same people in power today in various levels of government and stuff, and the same type of mindset is still going on and being intensified. So and why we should never forget about Katrina, and why unfortunately it's sort of a template for what they want to do to us again in the future if we let them. So anyway.
Well, it was going to be like Baghdad, the template of unrestrained capitalism and destruction of public services such as school systems and replace, and so on and so forth.
Indeed.
The disaster capitalism.
And Dave, can I say this here before
yes,
I go?
Yes, absolutely.
To everyone out there listening, if there's ever a crisis in your state, save yourself. Do not wait on your government.
Well, and help each other. Help your neighbors.
Yeah, definitely help each other.
Yes. Okay, you've been listening to World Labor Hour, and stay tuned for the Union Edge. We're going to leave you a little music. Compliments of Bill Gorel. This is Led Zeppelin, The Levee. Stay tuned, and we'll talk to you next week.